Hello, and welcome to the Data Development Podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to data experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or you can join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Cool, so we've got Charles Maracle here. He is the lead senior data architect at RS Components. Charles, absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I'm very much looking forward to the show. Obviously, as people who regularly listen to the show know, we typically have a bit of notes before we get recording. And Charles has sent over some actually really simple but very, very interesting notes that I'm very keen to kind of get stuck into and talk about today. But before we do, Charles, if you wouldn't mind giving the listeners a bit of a brief overview of your some of your background and experience, if that's okay.
Sure. Okay. I actually started off in the U.S. military, and I learned data architecture and data modeling many years ago in the military. And from there, I had actually gotten quite a view of a lot of the IT industry or sector, I should say. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is I did networking, I did small computers, I did front-end programming, as well as data architecture. But when I left the military, I then went into DBA for many years. Mm-hmm. I was doing SQL Server DBA. But what I really wanted to get back to was data architecture. And so I eventually went into management as a DBA and then sidestepped into the data architecture world again.
Right, right. Interesting. So the learning ground in the military, it seems that like that's really become or perhaps has always been a real good kind of breeding ground for some great kind of data talent. I suppose it makes practical sense why that might be, but do you feel that it is kind of exceptional? Because it feels the same way in the UK as well, from what I can see, that it kind of is an exceptional kind of learning place to be.
I think it really is, and part of it is because with the government behind you and in the military, you know, they're not afraid to spend the time, you know, training you mm-hmm. on learning what it should be. At the same time, you kind of get that real world experience of, you know, we need to get something done and we need to get it done now, but it also has to be done right.
Right.
You know, yeah. And that does give you a lot of good experience from that respect.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of it's under pretty serious conditions at times as well. So maybe more pressure than in other professions to get it done correctly.
Absolutely. I'll never forget after I left the military, I was in an interview at an interview for a company once, and he asked me how did I deal with stress, mm-hmm. and I kind of looked at the person who was interviewing me and I said, I've worked on systems that if they weren't right, the guy who sat next to me happens to be, let's say, in a hot zone, could die. If that system goes down.
Yeah.
He then kind of looked at me and said, well, you know, we do things with Red Cross. And I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah. It's hard to come back to that, isn't it? Or various other database functionalities. Mm. If God forbid people can't get onto their banking app for 10 minutes or something. Yeah.
It's, well, no, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, that's not to say that it wasn't, you know, I mean, it's not like I ever went to one of those sorts of places, you know, but it is very serious, some of the stuff that they work on in the military.
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of discipline, it's interesting. We don't have too many people, I suppose, on the show who necessarily have had military-based backgrounds. But, you know, surely as well, it must be kind of very formative years. Not just perhaps from learning your trade, but also, I suppose, your approach to work and business. Do you think that in itself gives you like a bit of a unique perspective on how you then kind of behaved and approached business-like scenarios, or do you feel like you had an idea and you've had to adapt from the way that, you know, things were in the military?
So I'm going to say that it does actually give you, it was formative, and it did give me a bit of a different view. Mm. There were things that I did have to adapt, obviously. As far as different view goes on things, you know, I don't often get flustered or whatever when I'm at work, right? Because as I said, it's not always as, you know, it's not always a life or death situation sort of thing. And sometimes people don't always relate to that. You know, I actually had a person in my boss's boss, actually, he didn't like the fact that when the server went down, I didn't start running around. Mm. At the same time, I was usually the guy who fixed it.
Right.
Because I didn't just start running around, you know, not really helping. I was actually thinking about it and sorting out the system. Some of the things that I did have to change, though, were how I dealt with, like, when I was in management, how I dealt with people. But only slightly, you know, because in the military, quite often, you know, when you're somebody who's in charge of you, when they say, I need you to do this, well, you don't really question it, right? You go and do it.
Yeah. And I guess, I think things are certainly different these days. I think it's a completely different environment. It's seemingly certainly the one that I've been involved with is, you know, it's very much like everyone kind of has a platform now. You know, everyone has a voice. Mm. You know, there's positive and negatives to everything, isn't there? I think it's empowering for people, but at the same time, sometimes you do think, right, actually, the kind of disciplined approach that perhaps the military takes in certain situations is necessary, but it's difficult to kind of flip-flop between those kind of two methodologies, I suppose.
Absolutely. I do think it is necessary, and I will say that sometimes I have suggested that it would be a good idea if most people went into the military for, say, a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, when they first get out of high school or whatever, for those informative years, as you said, you know, where you're really starting to work on, you know, going to work and getting things done.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that it's a fascinating time. You've been around data and had this career for a while. I'm sure you've kind of seen a lot of transformation in, you know, the kind of the people side of things over the years, and the way that I think, you know, cultural structures and methodologies have probably changed as well. And I think that it's a very interesting time from a management perspective. I think it's an extremely complicated time, and I don't know whether we've probably ever been in a situation from a management perspective where it has perhaps been quite as challenging.
I think I can agree, really. I mean, it has changed. Things did seem easier. Maybe that was just because I was younger. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But definitely, you know, as you said, people have a platform now, and you know, I think people are more empowered in many ways, and I think that can be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, people feel empowered at work to kind of get the job done. As opposed to, you know, just do it this way and this way only.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot, obviously, I think there's been a lot of positive change around, you know, people feeling empowered. That's the main, the main thing around it. It doesn't necessarily mean that things have gone, things aren't going in the right direction. It just means that it literally makes things more challenging from a manager's perspective. You know, it doesn't mean that it's not better though.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that I had to learn myself is that, you know, with the empowerment, you also comes the trust, right? I had to trust my guys to accomplish the job that I asked them to do, not necessarily the way I did it or I would do it, because maybe, you know, they have different experience. You know, some of my guys were much better than I was at, say, something like SSIS or, you know, an ETL tool or whatever. And it was easier just to empower them, let them do the job. But at the same time, almost scary, because, of course, I didn't know what they were doing. Yeah. Sometimes.
Exactly. It's a big, I think that's the scalable factor, isn't it? And I mean, if you can get to that place and feel comfortable, it probably is makes your life easier in some respects as well. But it's always a challenge. I think it's quite natural, isn't it? For certainly for someone who's ever been good or successful at a role, to then see someone else do it slightly differently to yourself, it's you kind of have to battle with your internal a little bit.
I did, and in the end, it worked out much, much better. Yeah. You know, yeah. Allowing them to like I said, to do the job. The learning experience for myself as a manager was when I actually caused one of my guys to take double the time,
right?
Because I was trying to tell him to do something the way I would have done it, as opposed to the way he was going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. It's a lesson learned as well, I suppose. And
absolutely.
And
we're all learning every day, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think you learn from others. I think, like, say again, to draw on the facts about how positive the positive side of things. You know, I love the opportunity to learn from new people, regardless of what their experience level is. Because I think just regardless of how big, small, etc., your organization is, you know, ultimately, you end up in a bubble. You can't fight that. You know, it doesn't take long. You know, it doesn't take long for your perspective to be narrowed. So there is just such intrinsic value in new people who have a fresh perspective. And no matter how many blogs, how many events you attend, it's very, very difficult to keep your head above water and just kind of remain at a high level perspective. And, you know, the people who really are going to enable to bring that are the new people, the people who are starting, the people who are perhaps moving into a new role. And I always love kind of tapping into them, regardless of their experience level. And it's amazing, you know, how seemingly talented people are these days at such a young age.
What I would say is that the people that I like working with are absolutely, you know, people with new ideas and not just younger people, but also people from different backgrounds. Mm. And I do think that, you know, as architects, we should try to be open to those other ways, because sometimes you're going to learn how to answer something from another industry or another setting.
Mm. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, so your background, obviously post-military, you know, was your kind of experiences in organization quite varied? And so would you mind kind of talking us through perhaps some of the differences? You don't necessarily have to mention which companies and whatever, but, you know, just like how varied those experiences were, maybe reminisce a little bit on, you know, what kind of some of the key differentiators were.
Well, I've actually worked in, I think, what, four different industries now so far. Obviously, I'd started in the military, but then after that, I went to a call center where it was very much, you know, they were trying to do sales and inbound, and I was dealing with their databases there. And it was a much smaller company, you know, 150 people. It was in Bedford, so it was quite, you know, close to home sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, I quite liked that compared to the military, because it was a much smaller team. You could, you know, things were more dynamic. If something needed doing, people would just kind of jump in there and work on it. And you could just kind of go and get things done. The next thing after that, though, I went to probably about a mid-sized company, and they were doing a couple different things, but insurance was a large portion of it. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, obviously, again, it was very different. It was very interesting. But obviously, you know, a lot more rigor and processes and, you know, things like that that you had to work within, as opposed to the smaller company. So it was a little bit, it wasn't as process oriented as, say, the military was, but it was obviously a lot more than a smaller company. And I learned a bit about how insurances work and how they do pricing and you know, the information that they have to hold. And then after that, I came back, or this, and that after that, I joined RS Components. I did have a small stint of doing consultancy in between, and I worked for a utility company at that point, but that was less than a year. So
right, awesome, and you know, the I think that's the beauty of being in a sort of technical role, though, isn't it? Is that now it's like kind of everyone needs it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Regardless of the business. So I think that's the beauty of getting involved in a career like yours. It's like everyone has data, you know, pretty much every business in the world now has some level of technical necessity. And obviously that is such an exciting opportunity for someone like you to be able to just have all these kind of varied experiences.
And it's really good. It's really great to be able to get out there and have different experiences. You know, on the technology side, I went everywhere from, say, SQL Server, and as I said, I did networking and infrastructure. I did SQL Server DBA for many, many years. And then probably about 3-4 years ago, I got into AWS and big data suddenly. And that opened up a whole new area of learning and ways of working, you know, because it's very, very different from what I would do in, say, a relational database system.
Yeah, interesting. So I want to ask about a couple of the, I suppose, while we're getting on to this point, a couple of questions that you kind of sent over, really. And a couple of them, I think they're really interesting. So the first one is obviously the need for good data, you know, and how we actually kind of define that, because it's a term that gets thrown around a lot, you know, and I know you mentioned sort of even within like big data, you know, defining good data, interesting, because it is one of them things that people have kind of thrown around, certainly on this podcast, and I've never necessarily gone into any more detail than that. So what, you know, how do you kind of, what's your kind of perspective on that?
So very simply, I mean, one of the things that I learned very early on, I was very good at doing reports when I was in the call center. And in fact, they kept me on for quite a few years simply because of the reports I wrote. And the reason for that is that if you can't define it, then you can't count it. And it can be as simple as that, right? If we need to be able to count something for whatever the situation is or the company, you know, if you're writing reports and things like that, and make no mistakes, you know, these companies are dependent upon these reports, right? If you know, if they don't know how well they're doing on sales, or they don't know how well they're doing on, you know, customer engagement or things like that, then quite often the company may not be doing well at all if they don't know. And so being able to define it is necessary, I believe, because otherwise, like I said, you don't know what you're looking at or even how to count it or how to use it.
Interesting. So, you know, do you think that that's something that is, like, say, such a sort of simplistic point to grasp, but something that's still clearly overlooked? Do you think it's kind of lost in this aura of the all the kind of sexy kind of data science and the sort of artificial intelligence piece that people are just almost more keen to invest in rather than, like, let's just get this first bit right?
I've seen real examples of this point being lost within the data science. I was working with a team once, and they were this was, you know, fairly recently, but they were working on a data science project that they'd been working on for, I think, about a year and a half. And I'd come in, and I was helping to look at the enterprise-wide data model. So I was looking at, you know, data from all over the company and defining it and things like that. And what ended up happening about 3 or 4 months after I'd been there, I came to the realization that they were counting something completely wrong and basing their analytics on it. You know, the data science,
right?
Their predictions were based on the fact that they were miscounting or misrepresenting a data entity. So they didn't know what made it unique in the end. And so their numbers were out, you know, in some respects for data science could be, you know, 20 to 30%, which can be a lot depending upon if you're trying to, what kind of predictions you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Now they, at the time, had realized that they were getting duplicates, but nobody ever knew why or how. And this was causing rework. It was causing time and effort. And then, like I said, the accuracy of their predictions sometimes weren't as accurate when these sorts of things crept in, when they didn't understand why.
Why do you think that, you know, this is happening? Do you think it's just because people want to kind of jump to the outcome stage as quickly as they can, and people are under the assumption that, you know, you can pay, you know, a data scientist or something to come in and all of a sudden kind of feed you, you know, incredible insights and give you this, you know, this silver bullet? Like, do you think that's almost why it's becoming a myth?
In some respects, there's, you know, obviously time and money, it always plays a part, right? Because everybody wants everything now. But I do think that, I mean, how we got to where we are, if you remember, you know, data science, even 5-6 years ago, data science was really, you know, guys who had, you know, degrees in, say, mathematics and programming. Mm. And so we didn't need to curate good data for them. All we needed to do was give them a data lake, and poof, off they'd go, and they would produce magic results, and everything would just happen, right? And everybody would make lots of money. But the reality is that if they didn't understand the data that was there, if nobody sat down and explained this is what this means, then they're going to make faulty assumptions. Sometimes they're going to make good assumptions. But you're never really sure which way it's going to go until afterwards.
Mm. Interesting.
Okay. And I think a lot of companies are starting to realize this, right? So I've noticed in the industry that, you know, like I said, 5-6 years ago, people were talking about data lakes and let's just get all the data and that's going to be the magic silver bullet. And up to a couple years ago or whatever, people started talking about the fact that all these data lakes haven't, you know, realized the kind of returns that they wanted, and they're now calling them data swamps. And the reason why they're calling them data swamps is because people don't know what's in there. They've just used it as a dumping ground. And so a lot of companies are now looking to data architects to come in and actually start cataloging and verifying and checking on what the data is.
Yeah, which seems like a very expensive model for them if they just kind of done it right in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's almost always cheaper to spend the money up front than it is to try to spend it over time.
Yeah, agreed. Very, very good point. I know this, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to that point and nodding along going, yep, we've been burnt as well. It's irresistible, isn't it, at times to do that, but yeah. And another bit as well that I thought was an interesting point was, you know, you wanted to kind of clarify the difference between analytics, you know, and reporting.
So I've also noticed recently, you know, a lot of people have this, they almost have this misconception, right, that we're going to put together a data lake and then we're going to put a data visualization tool on it and that's going to give us analytics. And okay, maybe not. Depend upon what you're trying to do with it. Mm. And then the same people also say, oh, well, this is our reports, right? So all the data in there is 100% accurate. And I think this is where people are kind of mixing the two. Reports are almost always in the past, right? Mm. They have to be 100%, right? So when your board is sitting there saying, should we spend money on this? Or how did that do? Or, you know, should we make a decision on this? They want to have accurate information of what has happened in the past. That's not to say that they might not want some analysis mm-hmm. on what they think it'll do in the future. Of course, they would want that as well. But that's not the same thing as doing a report that shouldn't change and will have, you know, data that is defined and counted 100%.
Mm.
And I think that's the real difference between the two. And I do think that people are starting to mix those up, especially with things like data science.
What's a common cause of why one would do that?
My belief at the moment, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know what a common cause would be, but my belief is the fact that it's almost like people see it as one thing or as the same thing. Because when you look at the two, when you look at them, quite often the outputs are going to look very similar, right? A report will have happened last year, but it's going to have the numbers in the rows or maybe in a graph or whatever it is you're looking at, where an analysis is going to have numbers in a row or a graph, but it's going to be in the future. And it's going to be something that you think is going to happen based off of your past experience. But for that to work, you don't need to have every single number for every single row. You need to have trends for analysis and data science, things like that, to work. You don't always need the exact number, but they do look similar. You know, the outputs will look very same.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. I'm conscious of time here as well, Charles, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, mate. I know you've got the day off today. You've got the country fair to get to and stuff. So, or hopefully, I don't know if it's still happening anymore, but... But yeah, so obviously where you're at now, RS Components, you know, amazing company, incredibly large business. I'm always curious about working in an organization like that, you know, within, say, your team, for example. Do you feel like, is it a case where, you know, your team kind of creates a, you know, it creates kind of these micro cultures and, you know, operate in different ways in like various silos, and that's consistent throughout the business? Or is there kind of a overriding culture that, you know, you all get to kind of enjoy?
I'm going to say, I would like to believe that there's an overriding culture. It seems so far, I've been there, you know, just under a year. And I'm going to have to say, so far, it seems very open, and, you know, they're quite, they try to keep us informed about things that are going on around the company and stuff like that. So I'd like to think that it's one overriding culture. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, teams are always going to kind of stick together. And of course, when there's a big do of some sort, you know, you're going to find different teams all kind of sat together, right? But I believe that it's treated, you know, kind of the same throughout. I could be wrong because I haven't worked in multiple parts of the company yet, right. but that's my belief.
And what's been sort of some of the most enjoyable aspects of the first sort of 12 months for you?
I'm going to have to say that the most enjoyable aspect really has been the culture that is there at RS. Okay. You know, we all have a job to do and we have things to get done. But at the same time, they understand that we're people and we have other things happening in our lives. And so the work-life balance is quite good. People as a culture, I mean, the people at RS genuinely seem like they want to get on and help each other and help each other to accomplish whatever the job is or the goal. And that's very good when, you know, when everybody seems to be working towards, I mean, obviously we all have different projects that we're on, but, you know, people are actually actively trying to help instead of, say, hinder.
Awesome, man. Well, it sounds awesome, and assume the some of the projects from a data perspective as well have kind of piqued your attention.
Oh yes, absolutely. So the project that I'm currently working on is we're trying to set up a data ecosystem, kind of something that is scalable. So making use of the big data experience that I've had in the past, setting up data lakes or a data lake, I should say, and then we're, you know, things like Cloudera on top, which it's very interesting, and, you know, I'm getting to understand the different data sets in and around the company. And one of the interesting things about that is each company has, you know, certain types of data that they deem to be, you know, their most important part of, you know, of their ecosystem, really. So, you know, for instance, in insurance, it was, you know, the amount of thought that went into how their pricing data worked was astounding. You know, and it was very intricate. But obviously in a call center, it was all about, you know, call length and call time and people, right? And here there's, you know, There's a lot of things about, say, the products that they're selling and customers. So it is interesting to see how different industries and different companies deal with that. And that's kind of what I'm working on at the moment, is, you know, helping them to define and catalog their data.
Awesome, mate. So anyone, as we always do on the show, anyone kind of interested in projects like that or is interested to learn more about from you or get in contact with kind of the career opportunities at RS Components, is there like a website or anything that I'm sure there is that people can go to?
So RS Components does indeed have its own website, obviously. In fact, it's a store, which you can find I'm pretty sure it's just rscomponents.com, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as, you know, a lot of us are obviously on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So those are always good ways to get a hold of us if needed.
Awesome. I'll share all the links, of course, afterwards. Charles, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for kind of sharing all your insights with us today. It's been a lot of fun, mate.
Well, thank you very much for having me again. And I hope everybody's day and weekend are good.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.